Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
Alignment on policies, politics, and personalities. You need all three to align in order to get an agreement.
Alaska lawmakers start thinking about who will be in the majority in each chamber. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, November 10th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a jury finds Alaska ski legend Dean Cummings not guilty of murder.
And if he had mental health problems at the same time, you can have mental health problems and still be attacked and still have to defend yourself.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sneezing, aching, sweating, and coughing. Who has the time for this misery? You have the power to protect yourself and your community. Boost your defenses this season by getting the flu vaccine. Protect yourself and family. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Alaska lawmakers are starting to think about picking teams in a way, as early election results show who won their races, who's likely to win, and how like-minded legislators might form groups to advance their agendas. With nearly every seat in the Alaska legislature up for election this year, one big question has been whether Republicans will form a majority in either the state Senate or House, or whether either chamber will be controlled by a coalition of Democrats, moderate Republicans, and independents. Alaska Beacon reporter James Brooks says some state senators have been talking about the real possibility of forming a coalition, but Brooks says the future of a coalition-controlled House is much murkier.
It's too early to say in the House, but right now, Republicans have leads in 21 of the 40 seats, a bare minimum majority needed, but it's not guaranteed. The last few election cycles, we've seen Republicans win a majority of seats in the House, but be unable to form a majority caucus because of divides between Republicans.
Right. And what are some of those key races for Senate seats that either surprised you or just that factor in heavily here?
Right now, we're seeing Democratic Senator Scott Kawasaki leading in Fairbanks. That was a close race and still is a close race, but he seems to have a comfortable lead at this point. The closest race in the Senate right now is Democratic Representative Matt Klayman, who challenged incumbent Republican Senator Mia Costello. He's got a very small lead, but right now it looks like absentee and early votes that haven't yet been counted are more Democratic than the election day ballots. So it seems like Klayman is going to expand his lead rather than see it shrink. We'll keep a close eye on that. In Eagle River, we've got Republican Kelly Merrick winning that race by a fairly large margin. The result isn't expected to change there. If you'll recall, Merrick as a representative was one of two Republicans who joined the coalition in the House last term. So she's considered a possibility for a coalition in the Senate as well. Remains to be seen there, though.
And then same question for the House. What were key races that you were watching there, and how did they turn out?
You know, a lot of the races in the House that I had an eye on, I'm still waiting to see what's going to happen. There's a couple in East Anchorage that I'm not comfortable on calling. The one covering Joint Base Elmendorf, Richardson, and Government Hill, we're going to need to wait till the 23rd until ranked choice voting kicks in and we see how those sort out. Up in Fairbanks, where Maxine Dybert, the Democrat, was challenging Republican incumbent Bart Laban, it looks like Dybert has enough to win and flip that seat to the Democrats. On the other side of Fairbanks, Democratic incumbent Grier Hopkins looks like he'll lose. He was placed in a heavily Republican district by redistricting. So that's effectively a draw if you're considering control of the House, both of those two races.
So, James, getting back to this idea of whether or not a coalition would form in either chamber of the legislature, I've always wondered, what are they actually talking about? I mean, are they talking about specific issues, the PFD, the budget, or is it just sort of general philosophy or what?
Yeah, I was talking to Senator Jesse Keel, the Democrat from Juneau, and he said that whenever you're talking about an agreement in the legislature, whether it means a coalition agreement or just a piece of legislation, you need three things, three P's. And he said it's alignment on policies, politics, and personalities. You need all three to align in order to get an agreement. So as senators and representatives talk to each other, they're going to be saying, well, can I get along with this guy or these ladies who are in a group with me? Do we have the same ideas, the same priorities on, say, the budget, on the dividend? Can we vote together on this? Do we have a good idea of who the Senate president or the Speaker of the House and the finance chairs, the leadership positions, who are going to take those? Is there agreement on that? How do you handle a situation where, say, there's a controversial bill that splits the majority? Are people going to be allowed to vote how they want, or are they going to need to follow a single majority caucus line? Those are the kinds of things that get hammered out.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, and there, as one senator told me, there's a lot of calls going on right now. Lots of text messages, lots of calls, people just coordinating and saying, well, how do you feel about X? And do you like person Y? One thing that surprised me that I heard while talking to senators was that there's the suggestion that the re-election of Governor Mike Dunleavy might encourage the creation of the coalition there in the Senate. The idea being that some of the moderate Republicans have different views on the budget than Dunleavy, and they're concerned about a repeat of Dunleavy's 2019 budget plan, where he proposed really drastic cuts to state services in order to pay for a larger permanent fund dividend. And while Dunleavy eventually backed away from most of those cuts, there's a lot of long memories in the Senate.
That was Alaska Beacon reporter James Brooks. You can find him at alaskabeacon.com. The families of the victims of a 2020 midair crash over Soldotna have reached a settlement, according to one of the family's lawyers, putting to rest a set of several lawsuits over the accident that killed then-Republican Representative Gary Knopp and six others. The settlement comes more than 2 years after Knopp's private plane collided with a charter plane, killing the four passengers, guide, and pilot aboard. Michael Schneider is a lawyer for one of the families. He says the terms of the settlement reached weeks ago are confidential.
The parties were able to come to agreement, and it wasn't easy, and it took a long time. But it allows everyone involved to end the matter, get some closure, and get on downstream with their lives.
Last year, representatives for four of the victims filed two separate federal lawsuits against Knopp's estate and his widow. Both suits also targeted the estate of the charter pilot who died in the crash and the two companies that owned and operated the charter plane. Their complaints alleged Knopp was negligent since he was flying without a medical certification. Knopp was denied a certification in 2012 due to vision problems. Schneider, the attorney, says the settlement consolidates those suits and that there's no outstanding litigation. An attorney for Knopp declined to comment on the settlement. The legal battle over whether to allow a road to be built through Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge will go on. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has decided to rehear a challenge to a land swap intended to support the road, which would connect King Cove to Cold Bay and its all-weather airport. The Interior Secretary during the Trump administration agreed to the land swap. A panel of the Ninth Circuit upheld the swap in March, but the appeals court decided today to rehear the case. The decision is the latest twist in King Cove's decades-long quest to build a road through part of the refuge. Community leaders say the road can save lives because bad weather often prevents planes from landing in King Cove to evacuate people who need to go to a hospital. Coming up, parents push back against potential school closures in Anchorage.
I think that she will probably end up going to private or homeschool if this program discontinues, because it's not just the curriculum, it's the culture in this school.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Alaska Health Project South Sudan is hosting the 13th annual Wine to Water fundraiser Saturday, November 19th at the Hotel Captain Cook. Alaskans bringing clean water to South Sudan. Guests can attend in person or online. Tickets for the live event at the door or available now at alaskasudan.org. Wine to Water, November 19th, 5:30 p.m., Hotel Captain Cook. This message sponsored by the Alaska Health Project, South Sudan.
A Kodiak man arrested in September on drug and weapons charges faces a second indictment involving large-scale narcotics trafficking in Anchorage. Law enforcement in Kodiak arrested 54-year-old Mark Nason in mid-September for his alleged connection to fentanyl, meth, and heroin seized on the island with a street value of $656,000. Multiple handguns were also confiscated during his arrest. A Department of Law press release today says a subsequent search of two storage units belonging to Nason in Anchorage in September turned up an additional 11,000 fentanyl pills. The search also found more than 10 pounds of meth, 5 ounces of heroin, a pound of marijuana, and 5 firearms, according to the press release. Nason pleaded not guilty to 13 drug and weapons charges in Kodiak Superior Court in late September. His initial court appearance on 11 additional charges from the Anchorage drug bust was scheduled for today. Nason remained jailed late today in Anchorage. A New Mexico jury found Alaska heli-skiing pioneer Dean Cummings not guilty of murder this week in a 2020 shooting in which Cummings claimed self-defense. Cummings, the former world extreme skiing champion behind the now defunct Valdez-based H2O Guides, walked out of jail a short time after the verdict Tuesday, a free man for the first time in over 2 years. A grand jury indicted Cummings on a charge of second-degree murder in March 2020 for killing 47-year-old Guillermo Arriola at a remote New Mexico property that Arriola owned. Cummings had been staying there and said Arriola attacked him during a discussion about Cummings buying the property. Stories about Cummings' arrest were marked with questions from friends about his mental health, including what some described as paranoid delusions and a drift away from skiing. But Cummings' attorney, Nicole Moss, says Cummings was steadfast from the beginning that he had shot Arriola to protect himself.
And so when he testified in pretty good detail as to exactly how everything unfolded. But in addition to Dean's testimony, there was a lot of physical evidence that supported what he was saying.
That physical evidence included evidence of a struggle between Cummings and Arriola, Moss says. As for questions about Cummings' mental state, Moss says he has seemed truthful and stable during the 16 months she's been his attorney.
And if he had mental health problems at the same time, you can have mental health problems and still be attacked and still have to defend yourself.
Moss says Cummings is thankful to have his freedom and is now trying to put his life back together after spending more than 2 years behind bars. New Mexico Chief Deputy District Attorney Jessica Martinez said prosecutors did a good job of presenting their evidence against Cummings, but that her office respected the jury's verdict. Firefighters found the body of a woman early Tuesday afternoon inside a house that was on fire near North Pole. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The North Star Volunteer Fire Department got a report of a structure fire at around 1 p.m. Tuesday, and when they arrived, they saw flames and smoke coming out of the attic and roof of a two-story home in an outlying area south of North Pole. A North Star spokesperson says crews on the scene saw a lot of the flames burning on the backside of the home, and so firefighters entered the structure, and on the second floor, they found a woman who was unresponsive. The spokesperson says they brought her out of the house and took her to Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, where she was declared dead. The North Star spokesperson says the fire was extinguished, but the house was a total loss. A news release from the Alaska Division of Fire and Life Safety later identified the victim as 19-year-old Jenna Inman of North Pole. The release says Inman's body will be transported to the state medical examiner's office in Anchorage. The deputy fire marshal investigated the cause of the fire and determined it began in the back of the structure where a chicken coop had been built. The release says the investigator found heating lamps in the chicken coop and determined the fire was accidental. The North Star spokesperson says crews and equipment from several area agencies also responded to the fire, including North Pole, Eielson, Fort Wainwright, and Steese Volunteer Fire Departments. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Anchorage School District administrators have proposed closing six schools next year as a way to cut costs amid a $68 million budget deficit. At town hall meetings this month, parents have asked administrators to take their kids' schools off that list. As Alaska Public Media's Katie Anastas reports, one elementary school community worries they will lose access to their school's rigorous curriculum.
The Anchorage Basic Curriculum, or ABC, focuses on core math and reading skills. It also encourages leadership, self-discipline, and character development. That's what drew Robin Gable to Birchwood ABC Elementary School. Her daughter is in kindergarten.
The Anchorage Basic Curriculum is what brought me to this school. Luckily, I'm zoned for it, but I would have tried to send her if I wasn't.
Birchwood has some of the strongest math and reading scores in the district, but its enrollment has dropped in recent years, and it's now at 51% capacity. That's one reason why it ended up on a list of six schools the district could close next year, as it deals with a $68 million deficit. Administrators have proposed moving Birchwood's ABC program to Homestead Elementary, 7 miles away. But Gable worries that sharing a building with another school could put those high scores at risk, and she says she'll consider other options for her daughter.
I think that she will probably end up going to private or homeschool if this program discontinues, because it's not just the curriculum, it's the culture in this school.
At a town hall meeting last week in the Birchwood gym, more than a dozen parents spoke passionately against closing their school. Parents like Rachel Arvello.
Why choose to close our school when our school is your goal?
And Kent Marchant.
Why should we not be instrumenting all of the what is taught here, what Mr. Thomas and the rest of these teachers are doing, into all of the other struggling, dismal schools in this district?
The curriculum and culture are important to the teachers, too. Holly Booth teaches second and third grade and graduated from Birchwood herself.
I totally believe in this program, like 100% believe in it. And I really feel like it also prepared me as a student to be successful in life.
But Booth has also seen firsthand how lower enrollment is impacting classes. She's teaching a combination second and third grade class this year because there aren't enough students to create separate classes.
The way our program runs, it's very direct instruction, and so it's challenging to meet those needs in a combo class. But because of declining enrollment, this year I think we have the most combo classes that we've ever had, and it is challenging.
District-wide, enrollment has dropped by 5,000 students over the last 10 years. And the base student allocation, the amount of money per student school districts receive from the state, hasn't substantially increased since 2017. Birchwood principal Michael Thomas says he understands why many parents think the strong academic outcomes should be enough to keep the school open. But ultimately, he says, the district is in a tough spot.
We can't take schools at 51% capacity, 60% capacity, and continue to operate them effectively, even fiscally responsibly with that.
Along with school closures, the district has presented the school board with proposed cuts to language immersion programs, sports, and the district's main gifted program. Jim Anderson, the district's chief financial officer, says he knows it will be a tough choice.
Every single thing we've brought up really, truly is absolutely critical and important to some group of students and families. Almost everyone in Anchorage would agree that we should be an efficient organization. They also, almost everyone would agree that we should be efficient in some other program besides mine or in some other school besides mine. And that's the challenge the board has.
The school board will vote in December whether to include the school closures in its proposed budget. And according to administrators, the district may have to close even more schools in 2024. In Anchorage, I'm Katie Anastas.
More than half of Alaska students tested below grade level in reading and math this spring. That's according to Alaska's System of Academic Readiness Scores released by the State Department of Education today. 70% of 3rd through 9th graders were not proficient in English, while 77% were not proficient in math. Education Department Commissioner Heidi Teschner called the results dissatisfactory.
We are in a situation that no state likes to be in. We have far too many students that are not proficient in the subject areas that are not just the foundation of the rest of the school, but for the economy and the entire society.
Teschner said she hoped the results would motivate parents to talk to teachers about their kids' scores. 7th and 8th grade students demonstrated the greatest need for support. 7th graders needed the most support in English, while 8th graders needed the most math support. The department's assessments director, Elizabeth Greninger, said that could be due to the pandemic.
Those students had missed potentially some instruction in the 4th to 5th to 6th grade range. And we know specifically in math that there are some foundational skills that are in the standards for those grades that really serve as a foundation for the 7th and 8th grade instruction in mathematics.
This was the first time students took the Alaska System of Academic Readiness Assessment, so officials did not compare these results with previous years. The Alaska Reads Act, which was signed into law this summer, goes into effect July 1st, 2023. In the meantime, Teschner said the department will provide training opportunities for teachers to learn new ways to teach reading. Next year's statewide tests will also include a reading assessment for kindergartners, first graders, and second graders.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank, Alaska, celebrating 100 years of helping Alaskans shape a brighter tomorrow. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Sneezing, aching, sweating, and coughing. Who has the time for this misery? You have the power to protect yourself and your community. Boost your defenses this season by getting the flu vaccine. Protect yourself and family. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
The biggest town on Prince of Wales Island needs a bigger cemetery. In Craig, there are only a handful of graves left. City officials have been working to expand the site without disrupting the rest of the popular attractions on Cemetery Island. KRBD's Reagan Miller reports.
There are 5 or 6 unclaimed graves left at the Craig Memorial Cemetery.
So while we do have more space, a lot of them have been claimed, and we have stopped allowing that system due to the lack of available space.
That's Samantha Wilson, Craig City Planning Director. She says residents can't reserve graves anymore because of the lack of space. That's why the city decided to start expanding the cemetery. She says the expansion is a big project. It will likely unfold over the next 30 years, and the city is estimating spending up to $30,000 annually on improvements. That includes adding more graves and a place to store ashes known as a columbarium. It would expand the cemetery by at least 10,000 square feet, including more parking and at least 200 new grave sites. The project also would restore old stairs leading up to the hillside graves. Wilson says Cemetery Island means a lot to residents.
Well, the cemetery area is pretty important for our community because it's not just used as grave space. It's also part of a major recreation area, and it's right on the water.
A well-loved trail winds through the cemetery, and there are ball fields, a playground, and a picnic area nearby. Wilson says residents want to see expansions to those areas, but not at the expense of the peaceful grave sites.
I think a lot of it's what we had in mind from the get-go, because we don't want to eliminate current uses, but definitely continuing to maintain the character of the cemetery while meeting future needs and continuing to meet current needs as well.
Wilson says that the improvements to Cemetery Island will be spaced out over the decades that it takes to complete the project. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
The director of the recently released movie Till studied film at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. KUAC's Robin reports.
Chinoya Chukwu produced her first feature film in 2012 when she was a student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Her film professor, Maya Salganik, said she came to UAF after finishing college elsewhere to pursue writing.
And had taken some classes and ended up on a film set with me.
Salganik's students were making the film Chronic Town in the winter of 2006.
It was a tough shoot and it was being outdoors all the time. And then there was sort of the, you know, it's the boys club a lot of times in film. And I remember very clearly Chinoya and I having a real heart to heart at a tough moment, just saying, don't let other people define you. Don't let their version of you stop you from being the filmmaker you want to be. And from there, she decided, yeah, I don't want to be a screenwriter. I want to be a filmmaker.
She went on to graduate school. And in 2011, Chinoya Chukwu returned to UAF to produce the feature film Alaska Land, about the Nigerian to Alaska immigrant experience. In 2019, she made Clemency, about a prison warden dealing with executions, and won the Dramatic Grand Jury Prize at the Sundance Film Festival, the first Black woman to take the top prize. Now Chukwu has directed the movie Till, about Mamie Till Mobley and her efforts to get justice for her 14-year-old son, Emmett, who was lynched in Mississippi in 1955. Speaking in an interview with National Public Radio's Tanya Mosley this week, Chukwu describes how her choices as a director for the film focused on justice rather than the crime.
The key was to show him in a humanizing way through Mamie's emotional point of view, as opposed to the camera taking on a voyeuristic lens and objectifying him. And so that's why when Mamie is looking at Emmett's body in the funeral home, his body is obstructed and we're just preserving the private, intimate moment that Mamie is having in silence with her child. And then when we do start to see parts of his body, it's seeing Mamie's loving embrace of him.
Salganik has already seen the movie here in Fairbanks.
There was one reporter whose review of it I read who said, you need to see it and you need to bring a teenager. I think that was really insightful. I sat in the theater holding the hand of my own 14-year-old. And knowing how much we've come as a nation and yet how far we still have to go is very self-evident in the film.
In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Sabine Pooks in Kenai, Kirsten Dobrath in Kodiak, Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, Angela Denning in Petersburg, Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, and Robin in Fairbanks. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Dave Emmert, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.